Hello everyone, welcome to the Greater Than 11% August panel show. Whilst our last few panels have focused on COVID and most recently on allyship, we thought we'd reconvene as a pair and take stock of where we are in a more normal panel discussion format with just myself and Renee today. Renee, it's nice to see you and have this opportunity to catch up and chat. How are you today?
I'm good. It's been a really busy day and I had a whitey. On the high street because I forgot to eat, and yeah, that was a close call. I haven't had that for years. Once I got a flapjack and shoved it in my face, I felt a lot better.
It's funny that you refer to a white tea as casually. I've only ever heard it in relation to drugs, so it sounds very funny to me that you're saying that. Tell me more about where you were running to and from and why.
Oh, I was picking up a print for a gallery that I have done an illustration for an auction for. And so being very picky, I've been to like four different printers. And this last printer's, which was my last hope for getting the kind of weight of paper, or weight of card that I wanted, I hadn't quite factored in that it actually was about an hour cycle away. So by the time I got there, I picked it up and then cycled back past my house to the gallery, which is maybe another 20 minutes. Yeah, it was quite a lot longer, so that was quite busy. And then I was running around picking up a few bits and bobs and stuff.
So it was an hour each way?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, sounds like you've earned your dinner tonight for sure.
And Crystal, what about you? How's your day been?
I'm doing okay. This week it was announced that Google is extending voluntary work from home until the middle of next year, so I have some mixed feelings about that. I'm happy in some senses, but also just trying to get my head around it and what that looks like in terms of that length of time. So I'm just trying to balance or recalibrate from that news. And work has been really busy, as I know it is for many people. And I'm also having a lot of work done in my house that was slightly unexpected. So lots of new forces operating right now. So feeling a little bit in a spin, but other than that, I'm okay. And I haven't been able to get out for my daily walk for the last few days, so that has also thrown me a bit off balance. So I need to get back into that routine to look after my mental and physical health a bit better. But other than that, I am okay. Happy to be here with you. Other than your YT, do you have any new news that you would like to share?
I've definitely got some news that I think you're going to really enjoy. I have become a foraging fanatic.
And it's already amazing.
I have picked in the past week over 20 kilos of blackberries. Yeah. So I've been cycling down to my favorite island, which is Two Tree Island near Lyon Sea. And yeah, I finished the work day at about 7:38, tootled down on my bike, and then I just picked blackberries or brambles, and it's heavenly until, you know, nine-ish, and then cycle back home. And so I have now become a stewer, a jam maker, coolie maker. I've been making loads of stuff. I've also been foraging for pears, apples. I'm making some nettle liqueur, some elderberry liqueur, some beautiful samphire I like got to put in my salads. So yeah, I'm feeling like I'm at one with nature.
That is amazing. And tell me a little bit more about what a foraging fanatic looks like. Is there any guides or apps as to where you can go for the best things to forage?
No, I've always been a bit of a forager. Like, I am one of those people that I'm amazed that nature has all these like gifts. So when I'm out walking, I'm always like, oh, look, that's a cherry tree. I need to come back in June, July, and get some cherries. I've kind of, since I've moved down here, had my little foraging peepers and antennae out. And yeah, I've hit the mother load on Two Tree Island. And I feel like I could have another career because I've started making this amazing non-alcoholic liqueur, which is about 50% foraged. And it's like a mix between Campari and Aperol. And it is so delicious. So I've been like, whilst foraging, having dreams of like having my own liqueur brand called Two Tree Island.
That's amazing. What is stopping you?
Lots of other things at the moment I'm busy with.
Who knows? Why don't you just, you know, launch a new brand of non-alcoholic liqueur? That sounds something exactly the kind of thing that you would do.
It is so delicious. So I've made Basha, my friend Basha, some, because I was telling her about it. She likes that kind of bitter kind of liqueur as well. I bottled it up last night and I was looking at it and I was like, am I going to give it to her? And I've never been like that. I'm always like happy to give people stuff, but it's so delicious. So yeah, I've got a little production run on that at the moment because I'm making a few for friends as well.
Amazing. I feel like my relationship with food has changed so much. I know we did a COVID and food topic, so I don't want to kind of retread old ground, but actually since we recorded that episode, I shifted to grocery shopping online only, and it's actually completely numbed and like killed my love of food and cooking, because I realized that although this is a very different type of foraging, I love supermarkets so much. I love the supermarket experience. I love looking at new packaging innovation, new food innovation, and kind of walking around and seeing things that go together kind of gives me quite a lot of creative inspiration for cooking, which I traditionally really love doing. But since I took that piece out of the shopping experience, I felt so bored by the food that we order, because we tend to order the same thing every week, to the extent that the fridge could be full of food, but it feels empty to me because there's nothing that's really kind of exciting me or that is like creatively sparking any joy, which is quite an interesting thing that I learned about myself, I guess, that I didn't really know that that was a big part of my enjoyment of the cooking and the cooking process. So I'm going to revert back to in-store soon again, I think.
Well, it's the same principle. I mean, I totally get that as well. I mean, what I would love is supermarkets with no people in them. That's perfect. That's the dream, isn't it? But I love that as well. Like, and also finding new things and thinking, oh, I could combine that with that. And yeah. And that then adds the excitement of what's in the fridge. You know, when you're like thinking that like something's calling you. I love that.
Yeah.
Apart from when you can't stop eating it.
I know what you mean. I've been working from my parents' house for the last 2 days because, as I said, we've had this unexpected work, which has meant that we can't work from our house at all. And it's so interesting because every time I go to my parents' fridge and cupboards, it's so empty and bare and boring. And I think it also, my enjoyment of having different types of food and that kind of thing completely stems from the fact that at home there is just nothing interesting, and that they kind of live very much on not necessarily unhealthy, but they do live on kind of food from the freezer that they'll take out the day before and plan to have that. And as I said, it's not unhealthy food per se, but it's just such a weird way of planning food. There's not like kind of glut of riches in the fridge, which is probably a good thing in some ways, but it just means that I go straight to the like biscuit store, which I did today, and the only biscuits that were available were Nice biscuits, which I think are officially the worst biscuits ever. So I was really
they are always at the bottom of the bin, aren't they, to be fair?
Yeah, 100%. So we talked a little bit about how we both are and had a nice little catch up and talked about your new foraging business, which I love. What is new with Greater Than 11%?
So since we last caught up, the website has been refreshed, which is quite exciting. There's new artwork on there, but also information about the collective that we're working towards building. We've also had some fantastic interviews and articles on the blog in the past month. A recent one was with Ashley Maritson, who's the head of communication for Arc Club, a fantastic workspace that's been founded by Hannah Philp and Caro London. And it's a really community-based workspace, and they were due to open in early April, but we know how that story goes. So they opened early July, and yeah, it's a fantastic place. So if you're local to Homerton and needing a bit of respite from the home working, check it out. It's incredible. And then we also had Jen Clark, who created an amazing Black Lives Matter for Marketeers resource that's on our website for download. And there's a really lovely interview or a chat between me and her. And she's really open and vulnerable in terms of her experiences and why she was like focused on creating this resource pack. So yeah, that's another kind of highlight in the last month. And then big, big news is that this week on the 3rd of August, we launched 20K for 20K because we've nearly reached 20,000 downloads. And as we've been discussing the last couple of months, we're focusing on raising £20,000 that we will then divvy up into £1,000 grants for women and people who identify as non-binary to apply for during this very difficult time.
this is something that I have been very excited about for a long time. And so just so that our listeners can spread the word, the key information from that is 20K for 20K. We're trying to raise £20,000 to mark 20,000 listens of the podcast. And what will happen with that is that there will be 20 £1,000 grants awarded from it to women and non-binary people who need it and can apply for a variety of reasons, from art supplies to rent to childcare, whatever the challenge is, to help tide them over. Would you like to share anything about the application process or deadlines?
Yeah, so we, as I said, kicked off on the 3rd of August and we're fundraising for a month. So if you're in a position to, please donate, but if not, spread the word, share it, as Crystal said. But applications open in the first week of September and we'll run that for 3 weeks. And we'll be doing a lot of outreach work because we're really focused on reaching people that don't typically apply for grants or aren't aware of how or, you know, what they could apply for. Because during this time, a lot of people within the creative sector have fallen between the cracks. And as we go forward and as we come out of furlough, there's going to be a lot more people that are going to be struggling financially. We will keep circulating information, definitely keep on our Instagram. We've got loads of IGTV interviews all throughout August with loads of creatives, creative institutions, talking about the importance of grants and also supporting the cultural sector. It's going to be super exciting. Sign up to our newsletter if you want more information. And you can do that via our site, greaterthan11.com.
Brilliant. Yes, please do get involved. And there are so many different ways that as a listener, you can help, whether it be spreading the word, donating yourself, or encouraging other people that you know to apply. And sign up to our newsletter. It's full of such goodies. And Renee, I love so much the artwork and the new content on the website. It's amazing. So even if you are a regular listener and you think you know what's on the site, definitely go check it out because there are lots of hidden gems. So Renee, I know that you mentioned earlier that you were cycling frantically across London to get some artwork delivered to a gallery, and you have been furiously making amazing concoctions in your kitchen with lots of natural things that you foraged. Something I'm constantly so impressed and in awe of with you is that the ways that you continually develop your creative skills and seek to keep them sharp. I just wondered if you could maybe give a few tips or thoughts on how you've been cultivating your creative skills during this time.
Yeah, during lockdown, I mean, anyone that knows me or anyone that listens to the podcast knows that I'm someone that likes a challenge. At the beginning of lockdown, I decided to go back to drawing, which I haven't done for a very long time. I've primarily been working in video and celluloid film in my art practice and started drawing using Illustrator and Photoshop because I wanted to actually skill up on those two software packages because I was pretty mediocre, and that's being generous. And so, yeah, I committed to doing 100 days of drawing. I mean, 100, why not? And I would say that I haven't stuck to each day, but I have done a lot of drawing. I think it's just about committing and focusing on it and doing it. And it's so rewarding. Once you get into it, you're like, oh, I don't want to stop. And I have to say, I've actually found like a massive passion for drawing. And I actually have to stop myself drawing at the moment because I've got loads of other things to do. So yeah, the piece that I dropped off at Focal Point today was a drawing, and I'm also creating a piece for NABS auction coming up early September. So yeah, I'm doing a piece for that, which is quite exciting. And I also started doing a lot of filming at the beginning of lockdown. So yeah, I need to jump on and edit all that stuff. I would say my problem is wanting to do everything. Problem, advantage, positive, I don't know. But yeah, they're the things that I've been doing in terms of a creative focus. But I've also been doing a lot of writing, that writing for oneself. Sneha Shankar, who was on the podcast early COVID, she's an illustrator. She talked about something called the morning pages and writing 3 pages every morning. And actually, I've started that practice and I find it super, super useful. It's just for myself that it does really help and clears the mind each morning. So yeah, my morning routines have been drawn out. I end up doing meditation, then I end up writing, then I end up making my very fanciful breakfast. And I have to almost push myself to get into my studio to start working because it's just like the breakfast would be lovely if it just went on for hours.
Sounds absolutely dreamy and also really helpful as well. I think there are definitely a few things there that people can try based on what you said. So I love that. Thank you for sharing. Part of the reason that I asked you selfishly is because I'm really struggling to learn at the moment, actually. So if I think about my overall level of curiosity and learning, I found that that's really taken a nosedive. And I think if I try to identify the root cause of it, it's probably related a little bit to my physical environment. But also, I think because of spending so much of the day in a sedentary manner, I am really keen to kind of get up and walk about. And I haven't quite got audiobooks to listen to me yet. And sometimes I use that time where I'm walking to listen to a podcast or connect with somebody. And so I feel like all the time that I have, I'm doing something versus in the mind space where I could sit down and read, as an example, to kind of pique my interest or learn something new. And even from a device perspective, I think I have a bit of an allergic reaction to my laptop at the moment. Like, it's related to work, which is great. And I don't mean that negatively about my work. It's just I kind of have a desire to get away from it when I'm not working. So I'm struggling to find the physical space, both kind of in a movement sense and in a device sense, to kind of enter into a different world and kind of allow my curiosity to wander around. I'm definitely struggling a little bit. That one of the things that I did just this weekend, though, was I went for a swim in the English Sea, which I had never done before. And I know that that's not strictly about creativity, but I have to say nothing has quite cleared the mind like a dip in the sea. And that was lovely. And I was like, oh, I wish I could have that every single morning, even just for a few minutes. It would really help. But I really love the sound of your morning rituals. I think I might need to steal with pride from some of those practices.
Oh, please do. They are so helpful. You know, like, I've been meditating every morning for probably in excess of 10 years now, and I only do 20 minutes, but gosh, it makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe stop renovating your house and maybe just move to Leon C, because then you could go swimming every morning and in the evening we could go foraging.
That sounds like a dreamy life. Let me just get in the car now. I'm on my way over to you. I'm hoping that there might be some fun creativity at the end of the renovation process, where I can do some interesting things with colors and art, but that fun cosmetic stuff seems a little way off right now. But yeah, I think we did mention it a little bit in the COVID and content discussion, but something I'm really missing is that learning and curiosity component. Or maybe I'm just realizing that I'm quite lazy and I absorb stuff quite lazily through just the way that I go through life or the physical environments that I'm in. Or I really like learning things through being in a physical talk. I think that theatre of it really excites me, and it hasn't yet translated through to being kind of doing that online. And I know that that's such a weak thing to say, because there are so many absolutely brilliant TED Talks and so much fantastic online resources, but I actually don't want to sit in front of a screen any more than I am doing. I'm constructing a bit of a barrier between myself and the kind of things that I think I would enjoy that would kind of unblock some blockages.
I think that's fair enough, though, because the screen time is a big thing. I don't know if I've just had like a little vision for you, but have you ever drawn mandalas? I just think that would be really helpful to you right now, just getting loads of different color pens, because it's really meditative once you start working on it. And then you end up with this really beautiful image at the end.
I was talking to somebody about search trends and how people, in terms of the houses that they're searching for, they're looking for kind of 4-bedroom houses with a garden, or 4 bedrooms or a garden, and that suddenly gardens have become like highly priced in a way that they weren't before. And I think, yeah, so much of it is around this whole idea to see like physical change or progress within your environment that you can touch or feel. Gardening, growing plants as well. I think all of those things, in a similar way to what you're saying with the mandala, is that you start something, at the end you have a kind of physical manifestation of your effort. And I think that you can see that in lots of other areas as well, from baking to growing your own vegetables to foraging and making that into something. Perhaps I think it's a very human component to that. So yes, I'll go and buy myself a mandala book, see if I can teach myself to draw them.
Well, you can just do it with a piece of paper and some colored pens, and you just draw different shapes, and you know, but you're drawing in circular patterns. That's where the meditative element comes in. And actually, that I really like that. I mean, I love coloring in, but I really like the mandala as well, because you do have to think. So the next, you know, concentric circle around what I've just drawn will be squiggles, and then the next one will be little triangles, and then little triangles with little circles on top. And you just build it out, and actually it clears your mind because you become so focused on what you're doing that all the other kind of noise and thought processes about what you're having for breakfast or what you need to do for work kind of push to the edges.
Well, next panel episode, I will give you an update on how that has gone.
Okay. Well, obviously, we can post all your mandalas on our Instagram channel.
Oh, God, it might be the, yeah,
least. The mandala challenge.
Exactly. We had such an overwhelmingly positive response to the last panel episode we did with the brilliant, articulate, insightful Aluma and Beth. And I have listened to it twice since, actually, and still learn something new from it every time I listen to it. In the spirit of understanding allyship as a process of continuous learning, I wondered whether you might be able to share a little bit on what your allyship journey has looked like, because I know that this is something you've been kind of focusing on and developing. So I would love to hear if you've done anything or taken any action following that conversation that we had.
Yeah, I mean, there's been lots of things that I've been thinking about, focusing on, reading. I did spend a whole day last week. I just took the time out to focus on looking at what was happening in the industry, both in visual arts and also in media and comms. And, you know, there's been a real mixed bag because, you know, as we've discussed, you know, outside the podcast, like one of my big concerns is like there's been a spike of noise and reflection and attention to the Black Lives Matter movement. And then, you know, give it a couple of weeks and it will just drop off. And that's what I've been really worried about. So I was like, I'm going to, you know, take the time and have a look what's been happening. And yes, there has definitely been some drop off. I would say in both those sectors, there's been some really interesting things that have really worried me and also really made me dance little jigs. So the Nottingham Contemporary Arts Gallery, based in Nottingham, they did that blanket statement in response to the Black Lives Matter movement when everything kicked off post George Floyd being murdered. And actually, collectively, in the weeks after, current and ex-employees got together and wrote an open letter in response to what they had put on their website about doing better and being more focused on inclusion, and actually really held them to account and called out all the times they hadn't done this and what their expectations would be going forward. And it's such a brilliant example about collective movement and collective responsibility and to bring about change. And I think we need to see a lot more of that, because I think a lot of people, a lot of organizations put out statements, but now's the time we need to really be holding people accountable. So that was like really that, like I said, maybe dance a little jig when I saw that. It was so brilliantly written. And Nottingham Contemporary have responded to that. I've definitely seen within media and comms a lot of organizations doing things, but they're not visible enough for me at the moment. But that said, you know, it is early days. So, you know, it's something we need to keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks. I've been attending Media for All, MEFA. They hold a weekly webinar every Tuesday. Former guest, an amazing woman, Colette Phillips. She's a regular panel guest on there. So it's been fantastic seeing her points of view. She's so direct and so to the point. And I really just love listening and reflecting on what they say. They have a really different panel each week. They respond to questions that the audience submit. So there's a real lovely connection and flow in terms of being able to think about different elements of racism, how to be a better ally within the media and comms industry. I also read a fantastic article that my best friend Pascal Burton sent me. It's by Alison Whittaker. And it was a deeply personal reflection on being an Indigenous Australian and her experiences with white people and growing up in a country that has deep, deep racism embedded in its fabric. And it was such a, like, I had to read it twice, and some of it is really dense, and I really struggled understanding some bits of it. So I really made a commitment to keep going back to it, keep letting it soak in and really reflect on her experiences, but also her points of view. And she references a book in that by Aileen Morton Robinson called Talking Up to the White Woman, And Pascal has bought that for me. And so that's going to be my read in the coming months. And I'm really looking forward to that. And I really feel like this is kind of research in that area that I'm really going to start focusing on and getting a better kind of insight into my own country's brutal history, which I've always been well aware of. Yeah, doing a bit more proactive work, a bit more listening. How about yourself?
Well, the thing that we both know from that conversation is that allyship is a kind of ongoing journey. And I guess the more I read and the more I need to talk about issues relating to race or gender or different topics relating to underrepresented groups, the more I realise that I need to educate myself further and also kind of just increasingly aware of the importance of the language and the precision of language that I use and actually the right terminology. And it's a muscle that needs developing, right? Like, I think, to be completely candid, over the last few weeks and months, you know, just before I start talking about, you know, Black British business owners, whatever, I stumble and I think, is this the right word? Am I using the right context? Am I approaching this in the right way? And so I guess I'm just more aware than ever. So in terms of the stuff that I've been reading, actually, I've been reading a lot of diversity, equity and inclusion glossaries on language to help me use the right words, because even when thinking about different types of allyship, so beyond allyship around race, but actually thinking about transgender, non-binary allyship, I realized that I was using a lot of like wrong terminology, or I thought that like I was using a term that I thought was an umbrella term incorrectly. So I guess I'm just trying to learn more specifically around that. And then I guess it becomes highlighted or useful when I'm actually having conversations about that topic in and of itself. In terms of the actions that I've taken, so moving away from a more like theoretical approach, I think the conversation with Aluma and Beth was so powerful. And the thing that has just kept sticking in my mind is around like putting yourself in between the problem and the underrepresented group. And so I was actually able to do that, I think, if that was helpful to Black people in my workplace on a particular topic, and felt grateful to have had that conversation because I wouldn't have thought to have done that without it. I guess now the challenge that I'm having, or where I'm trying to work on, is how I can be less reliant on Black people that I know to help guide me when there are things where I need judgment calls to make, because I'm aware that that in and of itself may be a burden or traumatic. And so that's something that I'm just trying to figure out. I don't have the right answer to it, but for example, part of my role is understanding how we localize a language that's been written for an American audience to a UK set of users and audience. And there are words such as equity as a really good example that actually has a lot stronger meaning in the US than it does in the UK. I think from the perspective of a Brit, equity sounds much more like a financial instrument than a topic which is about how you give everybody the same opportunity. And so I've been toying around and trying to understand that even though there are definitional differences between equality and equity, does equality mean more, and will that have more impact to a UK audience than equity, even though the definitions are slightly different? And interestingly, again, I kind of turned to Google search trends on it. People have been searching for equity recently because I think it's a word that's been used more than it has before. But that's just one example where I'm kind of, my gut reaction would be to ask a friend and be like, as a Black British person, does equity mean the same to you as equality, like, versus not? So they're just the things that I'm trying to be a bit more self-sufficient on, and understand how to ask in the right way and not ask the same people all the time for their advice on things like that. So sorry, that's a very rambly answer to what does the allyship journey look like. I'm also just trying to break some rules and do things differently around using our platform for good, which is exciting. And yeah, there are a few things coming on that. Yeah.
It would be really great if you could talk me through your learning journey on equity and equality, because I think that's something I use those words interchangeably, and I wonder if some of our listeners do as well, if you're happy to share that information.
Yes, I can do. So what I've come to understand as the difference, and there's actually a really great image which I can share along with this, which is a great visual example of the difference between equality and equity. The definition of equitable is dealing fairly and equally with everyone concerned. and equal is means of the same amount. And actually, there's like a similar conversation around systemic versus systematic. I don't know if you've heard that. They're both words that have been used a bit more. So equality is around giving everyone the same resources, the same measure of resources, whereas equity, I think, is more around distributing those resources based on the needs of the recipient. So the image that I'm referring to shows three people who are trying to watch a baseball game. And if you were to give them an equal chance of viewing the game, you'd give everybody the same sized box. But that might mean that if one of the people who was trying to look over the fence into the baseball game, even with that box, which is equal to the other two boxes, because that person is shorter, still wouldn't be able to watch the baseball game. However, an equitable distribution would be that the person who was taller wouldn't need the box, but the person who was a lot shorter, so couldn't see before, has two boxes so that they are able to watch the baseball game. I may have completely massacred that description, so apologies if I have. I will share that image. But yeah, I think equality is around everybody getting the same. Equity is around people getting different amounts based on what they need to have parity with other people. Does that make any sense at all?
That makes complete sense. And you didn't butcher the box analogy. That made complete sense. It was a really good visual description.
Thank you. So, Renee, you are often the source of just incredible read, watch, or listen recommendations. And there are so many things that I know we've both been absolutely dying to chat to each other about in terms of things that we've watched over the last few months. But because we've had more topic-based panel recordings, we haven't had the opportunity. So, with that, I would love it if you could share some of the things that you've been reading, watching, or listening to.
One recent watch that I definitely want to talk about is a documentary on Netflix called Cracked Up. And it follows a comedian, Daryl Hammond, working through the realization of his suppressed childhood trauma. He was on Saturday Night Live for over 10 years. He's infamous for playing Bill Clinton, like almost to a T. And he has written a book called God, If You Aren't Up There, I'm Fucked. And to coincide with that, he was making this documentary. And I came to the documentary first and I watched it twice, pretty much in a row. I watched it one evening and I watched it the next evening. And in terms of documentaries, it's not like the most amazing documentary in terms of craft I've ever seen. But in terms of story, it's really, really thought-provoking around how trauma on any level bubbles away and can sabotage you, create really unwell states in terms of your mental health, and also kind of how you deal with that. And so he was self-harming. He was an alcoholic. He was a drug addict. And he talks through all this and then finally coming to a point, and he'd been diagnosed and misdiagnosed, you know, with bipolar, with schizophrenia, etc. And then he finally meets a psychologist who says to him, no, you've got none of those things. You've got something suppressed that you're not dealing with. And then he, you know, he goes on this journey to find out what that is. And that's revealed in the documentary. And it's such a powerful look at mental health and how precarious it is and how precarious we all are. And I got so much out of it that I then went and read the book. And the book is interesting. The book's more focused on his time at Saturday Night Live, and it touches upon his mental health and, you know, his personal life, but the documentary really focuses on that. And then connected to that, in the documentary, there's an amazing doctor called Dr. Vanderkirk. And he has written a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And that looks at where trauma is suppressed in the body and that, you know, whilst you mentally can't deal with it, it's playing out on the body, which is the conclusion that Daryl Hammond came to. And so I then read that book, and that book blew my mind on so many levels about how everything's functioning together. And for someone that's really focused and purpose and task focused and a lot in my head, I forget that the body is also connected to all those things. So yeah, I found that whole process super fascinating, and I know you will get a lot out of it. So I am really looking forward to you at least watching the documentary and us chatting about it.
I actually genuinely mean this. I'd love to read the book on trauma coming out in the body. That sounds so interesting.
There's several books that I've read since, but I'm not going to go on about them here. But yeah, I will send you the list that I've been reading.
That is a great recommendation. I will definitely check it out on Netflix and also order the books, as I'm definitely looking for new things to read. I feel like my suggestions now are really weak in comparison, but actually one of them I haven't read yet, so who knows. Something that I haven't yet read but I thought I would give a shout out to or discuss because I'm very excited about reading it is a book called Period Power by Maisie Hill, and it's all about harnessing your hormones and getting your cycle working for you. That is what the tagline is, and I'm just really excited about reading it, to be honest. I guess there are so many questions and things and myths, I guess, around your hormones and periods and just things that you kind of inherit from parents or folklore or myth around like your period and how it makes you feel before and after and these changes to your body. And often it's associated with something like negative and debilitating. And I guess I'm just very attracted to the idea of how you harness it and become a little bit more in touch with it so that it's not something that kind of like takes you by surprise every month. So I'm really interested and excited to read that. So I've also signed up to her newsletter and I'm just really intrigued by the concept. So I haven't read it yet, but I wanted to shout out because I'm actually so excited to read it.
It's so interesting as well, isn't it? Because if you think about it, you know, pre-science, those cycles would have been so in tuned with women and knowing, you know, what that meant and where they were in terms of their cycle. And it's interesting how we've lost that, but actually we're seeing a shift in many ways going back to more connection to the body and understanding ourselves.
I think, you know, just even things like, you know, PMS and just these concepts and, you know, even just the concept and term of like time of the month and that kind of thing. I just think there's so many things that are assumed about those things, often negative, but maybe not. And I just like to unpick and learn that a little bit more. And I'm also seeing, I don't know whether it's just me, but I'm also being advertised a lot more kind of technology solutions or apps around periods and monitoring cycles, not from a fertility perspective, but more from a like understanding what your blood looks like and what that means in terms of the part of your cycle that you're in or what that can mean about your nutrition and all that kind of stuff. I guess it's just, it feels like a lot of taboos are being broken around, even around like period innovation, around different types of like products and stuff for when you're on your period. Like I get marketed that so much all the time and I'm really like delighted and intrigued to see it because I think it's great that that space, I'm not sure what it's called, flow tech, period tech, who knows, is just being spoken about as these taboos crumble around it. I mean, I watched I May Destroy You on BBC with Michaela Cole. I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a really startling scene in there where she actually kind of shows a blood clot from her period, which again, like, it's just not something that would ever have thought would be shown on TV. And it's so great that it has been.
I think that's amazing. I have never been targeted for any flow tech. I keep getting targeted by Clear Blue, which, I mean, they're wasting their spending because that boat has sailed, basically. It's only Clear Blue waters for me going forward.
The next time I get served one, I will send it to you so that you can see. There just seem to be things that are like really brilliant innovations when I look at it. I should try and understand what things I'm following that mean that I am advertised those things. But it's like tampons with these kind of like pads at the bottom of them and all these kind of things that would probably have meant that, you know, like in my lifetime or in people's lifetime, but I'm talking about me specifically, you would be less worried about kind of like bleeding through your thin, you know, office trousers and all of that drama.
How was that not created? I mean, that is revolutionary because I have to be honest, I used to wear tampons and pads together. So why like that? And it's just struck me like, why hasn't anyone made that sooner?
I know, it's brilliant. You can now buy, you can now have a subscription to period products like you can cosmetic products as well. I'll share a few of them afterwards, but I think it's really great that the lid is being lifted a lot more on that. And I think it's great because, yeah, I saw that and I was like, my goodness, the number of awkward moments or worry, the amount of worry that would be have worry. Been taken away had that innovation existed would have been really amazing. So anyway, that is my read, and my watch, if you'll allow me as well, is actually something called Terrace House. And I think I've mentioned this to you before, but Terrace House is basically a Japanese reality TV show. And there have been 5 series in total, I think. And the show follows the lives of 6 strangers, so 3 men and 3 women from different walks of life. And they all live under the same roof while getting to know and date each other. And the reason I love it and I would just recommend it so highly is because if you're a people watcher, if you enjoy people watching, it's so fascinating what you can learn from a culture through observing people. And it's subtitled, right? So it's all in Japanese. But a few of the observations in terms of the contrast between a UK or a Western reality TV show and Terrace House, a few examples be the pace is so much slower. They're in there for a lot longer time. So it doesn't feel like there's kind of drama all the time. Kind of the series that I've watched, the most action that happened was kind of ended in a peck on the cheek or a handhold. And the questions that the individuals ask and the things that kind of turn them on or turn them off are about skill and ambition level and commitment to following their dream and their passion. There's so much a focus on self-betterment. And I found it so interesting, and I just would really recommend it. Also, there's gorgeous kind of shots of different areas in Tokyo that they hang out for the Tokyo edition, and you get to see different foods and that kind of thing. But just watching how people interact and date and socialize has just been an absolute joy, and I've loved every second of it.
What I love is watching you, because we're on video right now, you talk about this and how like energized and happy you are compared to what was that shit show you were watching where they were all in bikinis?
Oh, Too Hot to Handle.
Too Hot to Handle, yeah, I thought it was that. And how much that made you feel rubbish.
Thank you, actually.
And you're like talking about how you're learning about culture and you're really enjoying the people and thinking about how they operate, as opposed to Too Hot to Handle just left you like you've just eaten a massive bag of greasy chips.
so true. I loved it so much that myself and Chris started learning Japanese on Duolingo because we were listening to it so much. Yeah, it's going okay. I'm really good at learning the vocabulary, but now we're getting to kind of character recognition, and I've stumbled a little bit on that. But I've got a really good ear for languages, so I have really enjoyed like hearing the words that I'm learning and then working out what they are. So yes, I highly recommend Terrace House. It's very interesting.
I will check it out. Shall we do a quick morning show?
So we have to talk about the morning show because you introduced me to it, and I watched it quite a few weeks ago, but it absolutely blew my mind because of how delicately it approached the subject of Me Too and sexual discrimination in the workplace. And I just thought it gave such a balanced and nuanced approach to the variety of characters and everything. So I thought that was amazing, and it's definitely stayed with me. It was a great recommendation.
Yeah, it's definitely, I had low expectations, I have to say, and I was absolutely hooked, as I mentioned, when we started talking about it a couple of panel shows ago. Well, I think at the beginning of COVID, you and I have discussed outside this, there's a couple of hokey bits that you're just like, why did they do that? But actually, it's really balanced in terms of looking at it from multiple perspectives. And I just thought Reese Witherspoon was like absolutely incredible as an actress in it. It's definitely worth watching, and it's definitely food for thought about thinking about how really small things can really impact other people in negative ways. Small actions, small selfish actions can really impact others in a hugely negative way.
I think it harks back to a lot of the discussions that we had around allyship and what that means, and silence is violence, and how you can be complicit with something unless you're actively seeking to stand up for people who you may feel are misrepresented or underrepresented at the unfortunate end of a particular power dynamic. It's made me a lot more aware of my own strength and power and privilege within a specific situations, and where that is there and where that isn't there. And it's not necessarily just on a kind of gender basis, but just between senior women and myself and vice versa. I think it's made me reflect a lot on that. I think that you know, in a lot of ways, the relationship between Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon is really powerful, because you also get some of the ugly side of how women behave towards each other in the workplace as well. It's not just kind of sisters doing it for themselves. I really like that nuance. And also the relationship between the researcher and the weather person. I thought that was a really brilliant one as well.
Yeah, and I thought it was really good that they put that in, because what they did is they inverted the dynamics. So you had a young woman, but that was actually driving the relationship, or so we thought, with this older weatherman who was very like, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the wrong thing? And the complexities of that and navigating a relationship within the Me Too movement, but also just a relationship in general where there's different power dynamics.
That was so great, because you kind of came full circle at the end and were like, well, actually, if you are in a position of greater power or greater authority, then you have to be even more careful and take responsibility and own the fact that that other person may or may not know that they are that end of the power dynamic, but you still have to take responsibility for your actions where that's the case. So I guess it's another level of like, what does consent actually mean, and how much above and beyond what is acceptable do you have to go to make sure that it's acceptable?
It's so complex as a topic and as a conversation, you know, that kind of dynamic is at the other end of the spectrum from out and out sexual abuse or a sexual assault, because yeah, you do have two willing parties. But in terms of society and cultural and upbringing, you know, all those things get muddied and watered, and it's like trying to work what's right for you. And I thought they did that very well, because like I said, they show it that the woman is driving it, but actually in the end, the reflection is, as you pointed out, that actually when someone is in a position of authority within, especially an organization and an infrastructure, it is the responsibility of them to actually make decisions that might not benefit them, but is, you know, more the right thing to do.
With that power comes the responsibility. Yeah, 100%. Right. Well, it has been so nice to just have time talking to you one-on-one. As amazing as our other panel guests have been, it's always lovely to hear what you're up to and what's new. I guess as a bit of a takeaway and a reminder, call to action to our wonderful, loyal listeners. Number one would be check out the new website. It's amazing. Number two, subscribe to the newsletter. Number three, watch out for the 20K for 20K. Please help us spread the news, share it with people, encourage those that you know apply, and donate to it as well if you are in a position to. As always, rate and review us on whatever platform it is that you listen to our podcast on. And with that, we will bid you farewell until next month. Bye.
Bye.